Okay, we're recording. Okay, thank you, Ezra, for the technical support and for the Maror Mekoymus, posting the Maror Mekoymus. Yashikoyach, everybody, for coming. So tonight's topic is officially titled "Running an Internet Website Over Shabbos." So that means that you have a website that's up that people could theoretically open on Shabbos, and they can order something through the internet. It'll be registered on wherever it's registered, I guess in the office or on the site, and then the orders are filled after Shabbos. So the shiloh would be what the issues are and if such a thing is permissible. So just to give a heads up, at the end of the day, most of the poskim say it's permissible, and they go through the various issues. We're going to touch on some of the potential issues. The bulk of the shiur is going to be on the issue of whether or not the transaction is permissible on Shabbos. So we know that we're not allowed to have a transaction on Shabbos. It's a decree. We're not allowed to have a transaction. So the shaila is, if when somebody logs into the site, hopefully it's somebody who's not Jewish, who's not mechuyev to observe the Shabbos, if somebody logs into the site and he orders something, if we consider that to be a transaction, is the operator of the site, is the owner of the site, is he considered having violated the prohibition of performing a transaction on Shabbos? So it's questionable if when someone places an order, if it's a transaction at all. It might just be that he's ordering something and it's going to be delivered after Shabbos, and that's when that transaction actually occurred. But there are some poskim who say that the mere fact that you ordered it and it created an obligation by the vendor, that itself might be considered a transaction. So we're going to go through some of the issues, and we're going to talk about a transaction that occurs on Shabbos. So it all starts with a Mishnah in Maseches Beitzah, Beya, Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So here's a Mishnah in Maseches Beitzah. People pronounce it Beya. The Mishnah says the following: Lamed Vav Amud Beis. Elu hein mishum rishus. So what that means is the following list are prohibitions on Shabbos and Yom Tov that is a rishus, meaning it would be something ordinarily, it would be a voluntary act, and the Rabbanon forbade it, they proscribed it on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Elu hein mishum rishus. The following list are things that are considered voluntary, which are prohibited on Shabbos. Lo danin, so a court would not be able to convene and have a judgment on the Shabbos or the Yom Tov. Velo mikachin, so one is not allowed to marry a woman on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Velo chaltzin, a yavam would not be allowed to perform chalitza on the Shabbos or the Yom Tov. So we know what yibum is if a man dies childless, so his widow is obligated, is zakuk, is bound to his surviving brother, and the brother has a choice whether to marry her, like we had in the story of Ruth, sort of, or to perform chalitza, which is a ceremony that releases her. So this ceremony will have to wait till after Shabbos or Yom Tov. The ceremony cannot be performed on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Lo chaltzin, you cannot perform chalitza. Lo miyavmin, and you also cannot perform the yibum, which is the act of acquiring the yavama, the woman, the widow. So if the man dies childless, so the surviving brother has the option to marry the yavama, so that kinyan, that ceremony may not be performed on the Shabbos or the Yom Tov. So this is a list of things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos Yom Tov. The Mishnah continues with a second half of the list, which is the same by the same nature. But elu hei mishum mitzvah. The following things are forbidden on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even though there's an element of mitzvah. It'll have to wait till after Shabbos and Yom Tov. Lo makdishin. So one is not allowed to sanctify something to the Beis HaMikdash. So in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, you would be makdish something, you would donate something. So you're not allowed to sanctify something on the Shabbos or the Yom Tov. There's a whole question in the poskim when the shul has an auction on Shabbos or Yom Tov, and people have a pledge, is that considered sanctifying something on the Shabbos or the Yom Tov? The poskim rule that that's not actually considered sanctifying. You're not performing a transaction, you're just pledging something. This is talking about actually performing a transaction. Boy, marichin is a different kind of a pledge where you're actually setting aside money towards the Beis HaMikdash. Below machrimin, another kind of a pledge. Below magdinan truma umayser, one is not allowed to separate the tithes on the Shabbos or the Yontif. Kol elu b'yontif amru. These things are even forbidden. These things are even forbidden on the Yomtif, Kal v'chomer b'Shabbos. Certainly they're forbidden on the Shabbos. Shabbos is generally more strict than the laws of Yomtif. Ein ben Yomtif l'Shabbos. There's no difference between Yomtif and Shabbos, ela ochel nefesh bovad, a famous statement in the Mishnah. The only difference between Shabbos and Yomtif is that you're allowed to cook on Yomtif. You can perform certain malachas for ochel nefesh, but otherwise the laws of Shabbos and Yomtif are the same. The Gemara says on Daf Lamed Zayin, what's the reason for this entire list? Why is it? What's the reason for this entire list that you're not allowed to marry, you're not allowed to perform chalitza, you're not allowed to perform yibum, you can't be maktish, you can't be mairich, you can't sanctify things to the Beis HaMikdash, you can't separate the chuma, the tithes, or the maaser on Shabbos Yom Tov? What's the reason for this? The Gemara says, gzeira mishamekach umemkar, there's a decree, these things are forbidden because you can't perform a transaction. So what the Mishnah seems, what the Gemara seems to be saying is, because there's a halacha that you're not allowed to perform a transaction on Shabbos or Yom Tov, mekach o memkar, you can't sell something or buy something on Shabbos or Yom Tov, a business transaction. So therefore, this list of items, which are technically not business transactions, they're forbidden, a gzeira, because they resemble these business transactions. So when I sanctify something to the Beis HaMikdash, even though there's even an element of a mitzvah there, but it resembles a business transaction, and therefore it's forbidden, atu mekach u'memkar. Now, let's learn the Rashi together. It's a very geshmaka Rashi. Let's learn the Rashi. So I quoted the Rashi. Pirish Rashi, Rashi explains v'zeh l'shoyne. So here's a quote from the Rashi. Mishum mekach u'memkar, that the reason why you're not allowed to do these activities. You can't be matish, you can't sanctify, you can't be married, you can't designate money towards the Beis HaMikdash. All of these things. You can't separate the truma or the meiser. The reason is because it resembles mekach u'memkar. So, says Rashi, the mekach u'memkar damu, these things resemble mekach u'memkar. Mekach u'memkar means buying and selling. It resembles a business transaction. Shemotzi mershuso l'reshus hektish, because you are transferring something from my ownership, from my domain, into the domain of Hektish. So therefore, it resembles a business transaction. Now, since when? Why do we have to forbid a business transaction? Why do we have to forbid Truma and Meiser because of the business transaction? So says Rashi, Umekach u'memkar asur min ha-mikra. So Rashi seems to be saying, there's some noise coming from the back, if we can mute. Thank you. Okay. Rashi says, why do we have to forbid separating Truma and Meiser because of Mekach u'Memkar? So Rashi says, because Mekach u'Memkar is forbidden from a pasuk. It's a pasuk in Yeshaya. Tiksiv, mimtsoi chavtzecha v'daber dover. A pasuk in Yeshaya that's discussing Shabbos. The pasuk says, you have to abstain on Shabbos from chavtzecha, from your weekday mundane activities, v'daber dover. And you're not even allowed to speak about mundane things on Shabbos. So because it's a pasuk, says Rashi, therefore being maktish something, or even separating the truma and the maaser, the tithes, even though these things even have an element of mitzvah, these things are forbidden because, as a gzeira, lest one violates mekach u'memkar. Why is mekach u'memkar, so to speak, the ideal? Why is that the paradigm? Because that's what the Torah asks. That's what the pasuk in Yeshaya says is forbidden. So it's almost like a biblical violation. It's midivrei Kabbalah. It's from the Navi, and we make a decree that you shouldn't be makdish, or you shouldn't separate truma, lest one comes to perform a business transaction. The second shot in Rashi is inami mekach u'memkar asur l'deksiva shtarei mechira. You know why you're not allowed to engage in a business transaction? Not because of the pasuk. Maybe the pasuk doesn't give it the force of really like a biblical commandment. The reason why it's usur is itself a gzeira, lest one comes to write. Since when a person performs a transaction, it's customary to write, to make a record of it. So in the old days, they would write it down. They would give you a receipt. Nowadays, it's on the computer. There's a whole question whether the computer is considered a biblical violation or not, but we tend to keep a record of our transactions. So the reason why Chazal, the reason why our sages forbade a transaction on Shabbos and Yom Tov is lest one comes to write. So now Rashi has the question, Im Tomar, Havi Legzera Legzera. But if the whole reason why you can't perform a transaction is itself Legzera, lest one comes to write, then how can we forbid Truma on account of a transaction if the transaction itself is only Legzera that you might come to write? Right? So let's learn up the Rashi. According to the first pshat in Rashi, that the reason a transaction is forbidden is because of the pasuk. So then it comes out that a transaction is a primary iser. So then it makes sense to make a gzeira, to make a decree on separating truma, let's say, lest one comes to violate the primary iser. But if you hold that a transaction itself is not the primary iser, the transaction itself is only forbidden lest one comes to write, so then how can we forbid truma? How can we forbid separating truma onto a transaction? The transaction itself is only a gzeira, lest one comes to write. So Rashi gives a teretz. The Gemara in Beitza answers this teretz regarding some other question. The Gemara says, Kula chad gzeirahi, it's all one gzeira. In other words, they made a blanket decree that you cannot engage in any kind of business transaction, and they included Truma, Meiser, making something hektish, they included it all under the umbrella of the forbidden transaction. Even though when it comes to separating Truma, the likelihood of writing is next to nothing. You're probably not going to write because it wasn't common to write anything down. You don't have to keep records of the fact that you separated Truma, but it's all forbidden under the one rubric of transactions on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Okay, now, when you're discussing this topic of selling something on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's a very well-known Shilas and Tshuva from Rabbi Kiva Eger. Rabbi Kiva Eger was a great Talmudic scholar. He lived in the 1700s. He has the following suffix. So the Shilas and Tshuva to Eger in Simen Kuf Nun Tes, it's in the Responsa 159. He has the following suffix. He has the following unresolved issue. So says Rabbi Kiva Eger, Im mochar loy chayfetz bi erev Shabbos. Imagine if I would perform an act of acquisition. I would sell you an object on Friday, sometime before Shabbos, b'meshicha, with the kinyan, because you have to have an act of a kinyan. You have to have an act of acquisition. Meshicha. Meshicha means that you drew it close, you drew it towards yourself, or you lifted it. You performed some kind of a kinyan, some kind of an act that would transfer the ownership. Obekesef, or you gave me money for the object. Now look what we did here. B'omar tikna l'chala machar. So we made a stipulation that we're performing the act of acquisition now, but the transaction will not be effective until tomorrow. So the Gemara discusses that you're able to perform a kinyan now, and through a stipulation, you can delay the chalos. You can delay when it's effective, the efficacy of the act, and it won't be chal until tomorrow. We're making the kinyan now before Shabbos on Friday, and it will be effective tomorrow. So sometimes, you know, you have a closing, right? When you have a house, you have a closing. So you perform the closing, you sign the documents, and the sale is effective tomorrow at noon, right? So you're performing the kinyan now, but the actual transaction is not effective until tomorrow. So says Rabbi Weger, I have a doubt. Would you be allowed to do such a thing, for whatever reason, to perform the kinyan? The act of acquisition was performed before Shabbos, say on Friday, and you want effective on Shabbos. The b'Shabbos nigmar hakinyan, that the kinyan will not be finalized until Shabbos itself. Now, says Rukveger explains himself. On the one hand, the eino oisa maisa b'Shabbos. On the one hand, you're not doing anything on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you're in shul, you're sitting by your suda, you're eating your cholent, and the kinyan is happening by itself, because of the act that you set in motion from before Shabbos. El de la atzma nigma. So it's being completed by itself, passively. Yesh leimar deshari. That would be the side that is permitted. Oidilma, or perhaps, usser. Maybe it's forbidden. Why should it be forbidden? Kiven de sof nigmar hamekach b'Shabbos. Because at the end of the day, the kinyan, the transfer, the transaction was effective, was finalized on Shabbos. So Reb Kiveger has a suffix here. But Kveger's suffix is, do we follow when the act was done, right? So we just established that it's forbidden to have a transaction on Shabbos. That was the Mishnah. But Kveger has a doubt. Do we follow when the act was done? The act was done yesterday. You gave the money yesterday, or you lifted the object yesterday. But when was the transaction effective? This was your stipulation. It's not effective until tomorrow, Shabbos afternoon, let's say. So the act was done on Friday, but the chalos, when is it effective? When is it finalized? When does the transfer actually occur? It occurs on Shabbos. So the question is there a violation? Do we follow the act, or do we follow when the transaction is finalized? Now, I wrote here in the, if you look at item Gimel, after we quoted the suffix of Kveger, so I wrote a question. We have to understand what is bothering Kveger. Why should it be forbidden? Didn't we learn last week, if we recall last week, we read the Mishnah that generally speaking, you're always allowed to set something in motion before Shabbos, and it'll finalize itself on Shabbos. We read a whole Mishnah last week. We talked about opening up the irrigation canal before Shabbos, and the water will be flowing on Shabbos. We talked about setting up the traps before Shabbos, and the animals won't get trapped in the trap until Shabbos. We talked about putting the food on the fire before Shabbos, and then the food will be cooked on Shabbos. So we always do that. We do that every day. We always put something up before Shabbos, and then the malacha completes itself and finalizes itself on Shabbos. So I wrote, Sarachian Bisfekaso, what is the suffix? What is the doubt of Kveger? Maishna, why would this be different? Mikol Malacha, from any other forbidden act on Shabbos. K'may Bishol, like cooking, Priestess Mitsuda, setting up a trap, Tzviya, dying. We talked about putting the wool into the vat before Shabbos, and then it dies throughout the Shabbos. Ukedoima, or anything similar to that. The Mutter Lahaschal Kaidim Shabbos, Almanas Nohe Lechas Benigmeres B'Shabbos. You're always allowed to put something in motion before Shabbos and have it perform itself on Shabbos. Last week we talked about what if it's going to make noise and attract attention, and then it will be a heightened level of Maris Ayin, like we discussed last week. But generally speaking, you're allowed to set something in motion from before Shabbos. So the Avnei Nezer in Orachaim Sin Nun Aleph, this is item Dalet on the notes, the Bior, so he explains the following. The Avnei Nezer explains the suffix of Rekveger, because Rekveger is asking, what if I perform the act before Shabbos, effective on Shabbos? Is that permitted or not? Because after all, the transaction is effective on Shabbos. But we want to know, so what? Why is that different than any forbidden malacha, that as long as it was started before Shabbos, it's allowed to continue and finalize itself, finish itself up on Shabbos? So the Avnei Nezer explains why Reb Kveger is inclined to think that it's forbidden. So let's read the Avnei Nezer. I quoted the Avnei Nezer. The Bekol HaMalachas, because every malacha, says the Avnei Nezer, he explains, HaMalacha Nasis Me'alehen B'Shabbos, the malacha is happening by itself on Shabbos. So a person puts a pot of chalent up on the fire before Shabbos, and it gets cooked by itself on Shabbos. Ve'ein tzarech od ela adam, there's no longer any human intervention at all. Once you put the pot up on the fire, it'll cook itself. Shafilu meis ha'adam. So he gives a very dramatic, he explains himself very dramatically. Even if the person would drop dead, terem nasa ha'malacha, before the malacha was completed, te'yasa ha'malacha, the malacha will happen. Imagine if a person puts the crock pot up on the fire before Shabbos, and then the person drops dead. The food is still going to get cooked. There's no longer any human intervention necessary in the malacha happening. Ein tzarech od ela adam. It's no longer necessary for the person to be involved. Avo bekinyan, but when it comes to a transaction, so this is the important point, and this is why Rabbi Kveger feels that it might be forbidden. Harei hakinyan nasa b'Shabbos machmas ha'adam. The kinyan is occurring on Shabbos because of the person. So I highlighted those words, machmas ha'adam. It's happening because of the person. For example, in mace, if the man dies, so if the vendor would die, imagine if the person sets such a kinyan, he sets such a transaction in motion, a delayed transaction, forget about Shabbos. Let's say the person on Sunday makes a transaction, effective tomorrow at noon, Monday at noon, and the person drops dead, the person passes away suddenly. So the transaction is null and void, because because it still belongs to the first person. Once the first person dies, his children inherit his property, and the transaction is null and void. You need the person's input. You need the person to allow the kinyan to occur. Or let's say the vendor, he double crosses the lekeach and he sells it to someone else before Monday at noon. So then the kinyan will be affected to the second person, because essentially the vendor, he nullified the transaction, he void the transaction, and then he went ahead and he sold it to somebody else. So the kinyan harishon is bagel. V'kiven da kinyan nasa mikoyach ha'adam. So since the kinyan is occurring because of the person b'shabbos, perhaps it is considered that the person is performing a transaction on Shabbos. So even though the person technically did the Maisa Kinyan, the act of acquisition was performed on Friday, but since you need both parties to be around, because otherwise the transaction will dissolve and it will be void, you need both parties to agree to the transaction, to the actual changing of the domain. You need it to be finalized, otherwise they can void it at any moment. So it's considered that the parties are involved in the effectiveness of the transaction on Shabbos. So here's the suffix of a kveger. Do we follow the act, or do we follow the chalos when it actually occurs? Because they're both through Adam. You need the human input in both cases.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely, Toby.
If you're talking about here where you're acquiring something.
That's right.
What about if you're the one that's the seller, even if you're selling to a guy who remembers that he forgot to pay you, so he then pays you by a credit card on Shabbos, and it goes directly into your bank account?
That's an excellent question. Right. So if you look back at the Mishnah at the beginning of the notes, so you have one party, the person's being machdish. So it's a one-sided thing, right? So even the moicha, you see from here that even the vendor is in violation. He's being machdish. So let's say you sell something to a non-Jew on Shabbos. So the non-Jew, he's not obligated in Shabbos. For him, it's nothing. But you performed an acquisition on Shabbos. You were machne, so the machne is over. So he would be in violation of this is the rabbanan.
But what if you were machne to him on Friday, and he paid you on Shabbos?
So that's okay. That's okay. Right. He put the money in your bank account. The transaction did not occur. So the poskim actually discuss that, and they say it would be better if you have in mind not to acquire the money on Shabbos. Right?
Okay,
so the non-Jew comes. He comes to your doorstep. He says, here, I owe you some money. So you can say, okay, put the money down. Right? Don't let him go away. You might never see him. Put the money down, and you'll have in mind to acquire the money after Shabbos, and then you'll avoid that issue. That's a very good point, Toby.
Okay.
So everyone got the suffix of Kveger. The suffix is, I performed the act before Shabbos. It's effective on Shabbos. Where Kveger maintains that it's still considered that the human beings, the parties, are still engaged in the transaction all the way through, even though the act was performed before. Because if any of the parties would renege on the sale would be void. So that means that they're allowing the sale to go through.
What if the buyer is nifter?
Same thing.
Then his heirs acquire there.
Same thing. You need the das. You need the das b'shas maisa for it to be chal. So if either party would renege on the deal, then the deal would be bottom. So dying is the same thing as reneging on the deal, because you need the das of the machne and the das of the koina to be around at the time of the chalos. Right? So that's how the Avnei Nezer explains the suffix of Kveger. Why in the world should it be usher if you performed the act before? The answer is because since it wasn't effective until Shabbos, and at the time of the chalos of the sale, you need both parties to be extant and to be willing. They have to be willing to finalize the sale, to follow through on the sale. That's why it's as if they're engaged in the sale on Shabbos. Now, Rukveger brings an amazing raya from a Trumas Hadeshin. The Trumas Hadeshin says the following. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch, Pidyon HaBen, right? So Pidyon HaBen, it's really a suffix. We're going to talk about this more. Pidyon HaBen, so the father of the firstborn, so he gives money to the Kohen. Pidyon HaBen. So are you allowed to perform? You're supposed to perform the Pidyon HaBen on day 31, because you have to let a full month go by, and then the father gives the 5 silver coins to the kohen. It doesn't have to be coins. It could be anything of the same value of the they say it's approximately anywhere between 90 ounces. My family just made opinion on Ben a few weeks ago. So it was anywhere between 90 to 100, some say 110 ounces of silver, right? So if you use one of those, if you use one of those silver dollars, so each silver dollar is approximately 30 ounces of silver. So you can calculate that you have enough ounces of silver. It doesn't have to be money. It can be any object that has that value. I'm sorry, grams of silver. There are 30 grams in an ounce, right? So each coin is an ounce. Thank you. Each coin is an ounce, and each ounce is approximately 30 grams. So you have to calculate to have about 90 to 110, some say 130. There are various views of how many grams of silver you have to have. Thank you. Okay. So it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to perform a pidyon haben on Shabbos. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Shin Lamites, Sif Dalit, Ein Poydin HaBen B'Shabbos. You're not allowed to be Poyde, the Pidyon HaBen on Shabbos. Now, the Magen Avram, in Sif Katan Ches, in that Simen, chapter 339, he brings B'Shem the Trumas HaDeshen. What if day 31 falls out on Shabbos? So, I have a great idea. Let me give the money to the Kohen on Friday, and I'll have in mind, now you're not allowed to be paid to the son early. If you give the money to the Kohen before day 31, and you let the Kohen keep the money, then that you are not Yotzi the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. So you say to the Kohen, I'll give you the money before, and the money will become yours effective on Shabbos, and I'll be Yotzi Pidyon HaBen in the right time on Shabbos. Why should we push it off till day 32? Let me give you the money on Friday. We'll both have in mind that I'm performing the act of the Pidyon HaBen now on Friday to be effective tomorrow on Shabbos at the proper time. Al menas shetochol haPidyon b'Shabbos will stipulate that we want the Pidyon to be effective on Shabbos. So says the Trumas HaDeshen, you're not allowed to do such a thing, but let's look carefully why you're not allowed to do it. Says the Trumas HaDeshen, mishum habracha. The whole problem, says the Trumas HaDeshen, is a technical problem. When will you make the bracha? Eich yavarech. How can you make the proper blessing? You're performing a mitzvah. You're supposed to make a bracha. How are you going to make the bracha? Erev Shabbos, you want to make the bracha on Friday when you're giving the money to the Kohen. Halo einu zman mitzvah. But that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is when it's effective tomorrow. Ubishabbos, so how about you go to the Kohen the next day and make the bracha on Shabbos because you already set up in motion before that the Pidyon HaBen should be effective on Shabbos. Haloi loy asa midi. You're not doing anything physically. You're not engaged in a mitzvah. The eich yivarech, how can you make the bracha? If you remember, we once talked about this when we talked about lighting the Shabbos candles. So there was a whole question, if a woman was late, can she get a non-Jew to light the Shabbos candles, bein hashmashes? And then there was an issue there, if you can even make the bracha on the lighting of the non-Jew. So one of the ideas that were thrown around back and forth over there is that you can't make a bracha if you didn't engage in the act. You can't make a bracha on an act remotely that you're not doing now. Right? If you put the mezuzah up before, so some people argue you can't make a bracha on the mezuzah that you put up yesterday. Now, very often we put our tefillin on, for example, before the proper time, and then we recite the bracha when the proper time comes. But that's different because you're still wearing the tefillin, so the mitzvah is to wear the tefillin, so you're engaged in the act of the mitzvah. But if by the time the mitzvah rolls around, you're passive, so there's a whole group of poskim, this Trumas HaDeshen is one of them, who holds that you can no longer make a bracha. So the Trumas HaDeshen gets us on a technicality. Somebody had the clever idea of giving the money to the Kohen on Friday, and the pidyon will be effective on Shabbos. The Trumas HaDeshen says, I love the idea, but the problem is, when are you going to make the bracha, right? You can't make the bracha Friday because the mitzvah is not being performed on Friday. The act is being performed on Friday, but the mitzvah is not actually occurring on Friday. You can't recite the bracha on Shabbos because of a technicality that you're not physically engaged in the mitzvah. So what do we see from the Trumas HaDeshen? That had it not been for the bracha problem, you would be allowed to give the money before effective on Shabbos. So it's mavur from the Trumas HaDeshen that lulei habaya, if not for the problem of the bracha, you would have been able to give the money to the Kohen before Shabbos, al minas shetochol hapinyin b'Shabbos, in order that the kinyan should be chal on Shabbos. So what do you see from the Trumas HaDeshen? It would seem from the Trumas HaDeshen, this is Rikivega's proof, it would seem from the Trumas HaDeshen that he's not concerned over the fact that you're affecting opinion, that you're affecting a transfer. We're going to talk about this more later, but whatever is happening by Pidyon Ben, whatever you're accomplishing with Pidyon Ben, that's occurring on Shabbos. So even though you're not allowed to perform Pidyon Ben on Shabbos, had it not been for the Baya of the Bracha, the Trumas Hadeshen would have permitted you to put the act in motion before, effective on Shabbos. Now, yes.
We learned before that brachot not me'akev.
Oh, very good. So Rav Gidon, very good.
So here is me'akev.
Very good. Right, so brachos are not me'akev. That means that he will fulfill the mitzvah of Pidyon Ben, but you're not allowed to do the mitzvah without making the bracha. It'll almost be like eating without a bracha, right? If a person eats without a bracha, so it wasn't ma'akiv, he's full, but he didn't make a bracha. See, here also, you did a mitzvah, you'll be yotze the Megillah or whatever the mitzvah is, but you violated the halacha of making a bracha. You have an obligation to make a bracha. So the Trumas Hadeshen says, better delay and perform the mitzvah on Sunday with the bracha than performing the mitzvah without the bracha. Even though the bracha is not critical to the fulfillment of the mitzvah, but you violated the halacha of not making the bracha, because we can't figure out when the best opportune time would be to make the bracha. So the proof from the Trumas Hadeshen would seem to be that you can set a chalos into effect from before Shabbos. However, Rabbi Akiva Eiger brings now a brilliant proof to the contrary from a Gemara in Yuma on Daf Yud Gimel. It's a famous Gemara. It's an interesting Gemara. It's a complicated Gemara. So let me just give an introduction to that Gemara. The halacha is that on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol has to perform the entire service of the day. We know that. Now it says in the pasuk, we had it not too long ago, Parshas Achrei Mos. The pasuk says v'chiper ba'ado uva'ad deso, that he has to atone for himself and for his household. Now the household includes the other Kohanim, but it also includes his wife. So we actually have a drasha that the Kohen Gadol must be married at the time of the service of Yom Kippur. He's not allowed to be single. He's not eligible to serve on Yom Kippur if he's single. He must be married. Now, so very good. So he'll be married. We'll get a Kohen Gadol who's married. So now Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, he's so concerned that the performance, that the Avodah should go well on Yom Kippur. So he's concerned even about far-fetched things. What if his wife dies? What are we going to do then? What if his wife dies and he won't be married on Yom Kippur? So the Chachamim say, we're not concerned about that. His wife is healthy and well. We're not afraid that she's going to die on Yom Kippur. But Rabbi Yehuda says that I'm afraid that she might die. So Rabbi Yehuda puts a whole complicated mechanism into place that he should make sure that he's going to be married. Now, the problem is he can only be married to one lady. He can't be married to two ladies because the Pasuk says, the chiper ba'ado uva'ad deso, only one wife and not two. So if you're concerned with this far-fetched concern that his wife will die, we don't pass like that. We don't put this whole contraption into place. But let's just look into Rabbi Yehuda's world. Right? Rabbi Yehuda has a complicated mechanism to ensure that he's married, but he can only be married to one woman. So it says like this: what happens if his wife dies? So the Gemara has a whole shakl v'tarya in Yuma, how the Kohen Gadol is allowed to marry a woman on Yom Kippur to ensure that he's married. Now the Yushalmi sidesteps the problem altogether. Yushalmi holds that he can simply marry a woman on Yom Kippur and he'll perform chuppah. He'll have a chuppah on Yom Kippur. So imagine if in the middle of Yom Kippur, if Rahman al-Islam, the Kohen Gadol's wife, dies. So no problem. We have another lady on deck, right? He'll marry the other lady on Yom Kippur itself. Now, even though we just read the Mishnah in Beya that you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos or Yom Tif, certainly not on Yom Kippur, and we're going to allow the Kohen Gadol to get married on Yom Kippur and even to have chuppah on Yom Kippur. So the answer is that because he needs to be married, otherwise we can't perform the service, we're going to waive the rabbinic prohibition against getting married on Yom Kippur. That's what the Yushalmi says. Now, we're not learning Tzuvis now, but there's a whole machlekes if the chuppah has to be roi labia, right? So what happens when the chassan and the kallah, they go into seclusion, and that finalizes, that consummates the marriage. Now, how does that finalize the marriage? So some people say that the way the chuppah works is yichud haroi labia. It has to be that they're secluded in such a way that they're able to be intimate. They don't have to be intimate, but the fact that they're secluded together in a way that allows them to be intimate, that would finalize the Kiddushin, and she would be considered Beisel. Now, obviously, on Yom Kippur, they're not allowed to have marital relations. That's one of the five Inuyim, so it's not a Yichud that's Roy Labia. So the Yushalmi must hold that Chuppah is Hachnasa L'Rishusa. I don't want to get too technical, but the Chuppah is simply he brings his wife into his domain. That's why at a Chasana, we make sure that the Chasan rents the Yichud room, because besides that it should be Roy Labia, we want that he brings his wife into a room that's his, as if they're setting up a home together. He brings the girl into his domain. So the Yushalmi holds that's sufficient. Now, the Bavli holds not like that. The Bavli holds that you can't perform the chuppah on Yom Kippur because you need a yichud haroy labia. So what do? So we have a whole complicated mechanism here, how to ensure that he's married, but that he's only married to one woman. So the Gemara goes through a cheshbon. Let's see if we can figure out the cheshbon. So what he does is like this. This is a suggestion of the Bavli in order to accommodate Rabbi Yehuda's concern lest his wife dies. Let him marry two wives. Maybe he's married to a woman already. So marry a second wife and he'll have two wives. Wife A and wife B. Let's say wife A is his real wife and the second wife is, let's call her, she's the surrogate wife. So the first wife is the real wife. He'll give a get. He married both women before Yom Kippur. He gives a get to wife B. And he says, if my real wife lives out Yom Kippur, she lives out the day, so then you're divorced retroactively. So that means that as long as his real wife is alive, the second wife is divorced retroactively. What if his wife dies on Yom Kippur? So then you're not divorced retroactively, and you're my second wife. The problem is, let's say his first wife dies at Chatzos of Yom Kippur. So that will deactivate the get of the second one. It'll turn out that he's married to two women the first half of the day. So the answer is he gives another get to his primary wife, and he says that if I see that you're going to die, I'm going to trigger that get, and you'll be divorced retroactively. So it's like he's juggling these two wives over here. If his primary wife lives, then the second wife is divorced. If his primary wife dies, the second wife is not divorced, and he has his second wife all through the day, and he has to trigger a get now on the first wife that he shouldn't be married to two women at any point during the day. A whole complicated legal fiction that he should be married to one wife and not to two. Now here's Rik Feger's kasha, right? The Gemara is complicated as it is, but says Rik Feger a brilliant question. Why do you have to marry both wives? Why can't he have one wife? And why can't he give the second woman a delayed kedushin? What we're discussing now. I am hereby marrying you in the event that it should be effective tomorrow if the Kohen Gadol's primary wife dies. So imagine if his primary wife is alive till midday. So he's married to his first wife until Chatzos. If and when she dies during the day, he already did a delayed kedushin to the second wife from before, and then that will be effective after the death of his primary wife. And seemingly, this would be the best solution at all. And why does the Yushalmi say that he just marries her on Yom Kippur? If you do this, you don't have to waive any prohibition. He did the Kedushin before, and it'll be effective on Yom Kippur. So he didn't even violate a prohibition. So says Ruki Vager, you see from this complicated Gemara that you're not allowed to perform the act before, that it should be effective on Shabbos. So that's why the Yushalmi doesn't bother doing that, because you're going to be violating something anyway. So you might as well just marry her on Yom Kippur itself. And the Bavli, who holds that you can't marry her on Yom Kippur, the Bavli has to have this whole complicated construct of divorcing one and divorcing the other, having the Kedushins performed before, because performing a delayed Kedushin would be forbidden if it's effective on Yom Kippur. That's Rik Feger's right. So now,
Rabbi Yehuda, yes. I just have one quick question.
Sure.
I thought there's a concept of you can't have a Tanai Kedushin, like that's why they say certain prenuptial agreements, the way the Goyim do it, creates too much of a Tanai in the Kedushin.
That's a good question. So you can't perform, so that's a very good question. So what the problem is because a person doesn't make his Bia a Bilas Nus, right? So if a person made a condition before, then we assume that he waived all the conditions when he has Bia. Over here, He doesn't have to actually have bia. Let him just have the chuppah before, and it will be assumed that and since everybody knows he's only marrying her for this purpose, so we'll believe him when he says that he didn't waive the condition, right? So in other words, it doesn't automatically void any condition. It's just that the assumption is that when a man lives with his wife as husband and wife, that he nullified any conditions before because he doesn't want to be caught red-handed having had relations with a woman that the kedushin was bottled. Over here, the whole kedushin is only a backup kedushin in the first place. So let him marry her beforehand in the event effective tomorrow if his primary wife dies, and we will assume that the condition is still in place. That's Rikveger's kasha, and therefore Rikveger proves that you're not allowed to make a delayed transaction effective on Shabbos. That was a great proof of Rikveger. Rikveger goes on there. He goes back and forth on this, but that's his proof. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein comes along in Igris Moshe, Orach Chaim, Gimel, Siman, Mem, Dalet. So if we're keeping track of all of this, now we really have a contradiction now between the Trumas HaDeshen and between this whole complicated proof of Rikveger. Because on the one hand, the Trumas HaDeshen did seem to allow to give the Pidin HaBen money to the Kohen before, and it'll be effective on Shabbos had it not been for the Bracha problem. On the other hand, Rikveger has a proof that the Gemara doesn't utilize marrying the woman before that it should be effective on Yom Kippur. That would seem to imply that you're not allowed to do a delayed transaction effective on Shabbos or Yom Kippur. So we have now a contradiction. So Rav Moshe Feinstein comes along and says that Rikveger himself realizes that each of these proofs is not really compelling, because otherwise Rikveger would have a contradiction on his hands between the Trumas HaDeshen and the Gemara in Yuma that he came up with. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that even Rikveger himself realizes that these proofs are not compelling on their own, because the Trumas HaDeshen is not a proof. Because even though the Trumas HaDeshen seems to permit giving the money before and having the pidyon effective on Shabbos, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, pidyon HaBen is not really a transaction. The pidyon HaBen is not really a transaction because it's not as if the Kohen owns the baby, and when I give money to the Kohen, then the baby is transferred from the Kohen's domain back to the father's domain. The pidyon HaBen is not a transaction. It's more of a ceremony. It's a token. It's a matnas kahuna. You have to give money to the Kohen, but you're not really buying the baby. We refer to it as opinion because the Pasuk calls it opinion. It's like we're redeeming the fact that Hashem saved the firstborn when he destroyed the firstborn of Mitzrayim. So we show thanks to Hashem by redeeming our firstborn. We give opinion, we give money, we ransom. We ransom the firstborn as a remembrance to that. And it's a matnas kuna. But you're not really buying anything. That's one. All you're doing is paying off the money. It's not really a shini rishus. So now, the only reason why pidyon HaBen is forbidden because of mekach or memkar, after all, because the Shulchan Aruch says you cannot perform a pidyon HaBen on Shabbos, that's just because we refer to it as a pidyon. We look at it, we treat it like a transaction. But it's not really a transaction. So since the ma'aseh pidyon was done before, it's only a pidyon by name alone, and that ceremony would have been performed on Friday. That's why the Trumas HaDeshen doesn't object to the fact that it's occurring on Shabbos, because it's not a real transaction. Now, the Rivash says that there might be a different reason why you can't perform Pidyon HaBen on Shabbos, because you're paying off a debt. It's a priyas chov. So to that, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, yes, you are paying off a debt, but since you technically gave the money before Shabbos, it's not the normal way of paying off a debt. Normally, when you pay off a debt, you don't. Maybe you give the guy a post-dated check. That's because you still have the money in your bank. But nobody gives the money to the creditor and says that I want the debt to be paid effective tomorrow. There's no reason. If you're giving the money up now anyway, what's the point of saying it's effective tomorrow? So the whole thing is really like a convoluted case, and therefore this would not have been forbidden under the normal rule of a transaction or paying off a debt, if not for the fact that there's a bracha. So Trumas HaDeshen is not a proof that you're allowed to perform a delayed reaction, because Trumas HaDeshen is not really because the Pidyon HaBen is not really a transaction. That's one. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein that the sugya in Yuma, that the Gemara never suggests to marry her before, effective tomorrow, that's not a proof either. Because, so Reb Ezra, you probably learned this, because chuppah is not a kinyan, right? Chuppah is a matzav. Chuppah is a state of being. In other words, he gives money to the girl, So now he performed the erisin. Now he takes the girl into his domain. It's more of like a ceremony. It's not a kinyan. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says there might not be such a thing. There might not be such a mechanism to perform chuppah on Friday and it'll be effective tomorrow on Yom Kippur or on Shabbos. There's no such thing. By a regular kinyan, where I give you money and it gets transferred from your domain to my domain, so then you can delay it. I'll give you the money now and it'll be chal tomorrow. But chuppah is not a kinyan. Chuppah is a state of being. So when you perform the chuppah yesterday, either it's chal, either it was a meaningful chuppah then, or it wasn't. You can't perform a chuppah, like an empty chuppah that's not effective, and then say it should be effective tomorrow. Either the chuppah is effective now, or it's not effective now. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, he's not coming to argue on Kveger, he's saying that Kveger himself probably realize that both of these proofs are not compelling, because otherwise he would have a contradiction between his proof from the Gemara and Yuma to the Trumas Hadeshen of Pidin HaBen. So you probably could argue either of these two points, that the Pidin HaBen is not a proof that you're allowed to, because Pidin HaBen is not a real transaction, and Chuppah is not a raya that you're not allowed to, because maybe you would theoretically be allowed to do such a thing, but there's simply no mechanism to perform a Chuppah that it should be delayed and effective tomorrow. A Kinyan, you can delay. There's such a mechanism. We learn it out. There's a t'nai. You can do such a thing. It's a little bit what you were asking Ezra before. But a chuppah, it's all or nothing. Either it was effective at the time or it wasn't. It's a state of being. So therefore, none of these proofs are a proof. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, he concludes, this is at the end of item tes. Memela, he says, it's a umasik. Rav Moshe Feinstein's conclusion is, the ein raya lesser oy lehatir. We really don't have a proof either way. We don't have a proof to say it's usher because the Gemara and Yuma is not a proof. We don't have a proof to say it's mutter because the story of the Trumas Hadeshen with the Pinyan Ben is not a proof to say it's mutter. Umemela azlinan lechumra. Therefore, we have to be machmir the kfar hoira zakein hadgoin Rikveger in deference to Rikveger. Because Rikveger himself went back and forth and he didn't arrive at a clear conclusion. So who are we to be lenient, says Rav Moshe, and we have to say that it's forbidden. So it would be forbidden to put a delayed transaction into effect that it should be effective on Shabbos, because we treat it as if the parties are involved on Shabbos. We were not able to bring proofs conclusively either way. So Rav Moshe leaves it at that, and out of deference to Kveger, he says it's forbidden. Okay, now in item Yud, forget about all of these complicated cases. There's a very simple case where this discussion would be relevant. Imagine if Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos, right? So the first Seder is Mitzray Shabbos. It happens from time to time. That's the case where you have to wake up early in Daven Shacharis because you want to eat your Suda with the Challah before the third hour. So you want to do everything quickly. Now, you want to have Chametz on Shabbos. But what about the remaining chametz? It's a big problem, right? So normally what we do is we have to somehow, so we skimp, we make sure we don't have too much excess chametz, and any leftover chametz, we flush down the toilet or whatever, similar to what we did this year. We didn't go out and make any bonfires. We simply disposed of the chametz on Erev Pesach privately in our own homes. That's what we normally do when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. But how about you make a transaction with a non-Jew before Shabbos, and say any leftover chametz, right, before the forbidden hour should be transferred over to the non-Jew. So can I perform a delayed reaction, kinyan, on Erev Pesach? So this is where this question would really be negay, would really be practical, and Rikveger would say that you're not allowed to. Okay, now coming back to the topic of our discussion, so in Yud Aleph, are you allowed to leave your website open on Shabbos and potentially, customers could be coming and registering onto the website and ordering things and making purchases. Now, again, there are those who argue that no transaction is occurring at that point. He's just ordering it. Even if he gives you his credit card and he's paying and his card is being charged, but no transaction occurred. So it might not be a question to begin with. But there are those who say that this does qualify as a transaction because the minhag hamedina is that such an agreement is binding. So it would be considered a transaction. So the poskim who talked about this didn't talk so much about the internet situation, but they compared it to a vending machine. So you have a vending machine, you sell toys to kids, a gumball machine, or you sell soda, or you sell bags of potato chips. You have a vending machine, nowadays they're not as common. You have them in the bus stations, or you have them in the airports. So you have a vending machine. Some yeshivas have it. So you have a vending machine that's automatic, that's operating on Shabbos. So the Marshag lived about 100 years ago, Rav Gershon Greenfeld. So he talks about a vending machine, and it's brought in the Minchas Yitzchak from Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, one of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael. So they want to say like this. So first of all, even though Rav Kiva Eger had a doubt, and even though Rav Moshe Feinstein said in deference to Kiva Eger, we're not going to perform delayed transactions that are effective on Shabbos, not everybody accepted Rav Kiva Eger's stringency, and a lot of poskim felt that you did the action before, and it's basically passive on Shabbos, and therefore there'll be no problem. So as far as the actual transaction occurring on Shabbos, it wouldn't be a problem. So mind you, the vending machine is in a way a more severe question than the website, because the vending machine, clearly the transaction is occurring on Shabbos. The person's putting in his quarter, and he's getting his gumball or he's getting his little toy on Shabbos. So the acquisition, the transaction is occurring on Shabbos. So says the Marshag that even according to your case, even if you accept your Kivayah stringency, it would still be mutter. Why? Because that was a typo. The shiny hasam over there in your Kivayah's case, you bedafka were performing the act that it should be effective on Shabbos. Or let's say the Gemara Numa, let's say the Yom Kippur case. If we would have done it that way, if we would have married the woman before and have the Kedushin effective on Yom Kippur, you specifically want it to be effective on Yom Kippur, that's why it's considered that the parties are engaged in the transaction that's occurring on Yom Kippur or on Shabbos. But over here, you set up your vending machine before Shabbos, it's there all week. You don't particularly are being machta it on Shabbos. You didn't even set it up before Shabbos with the intent that you should be machne bedafka on Shabbos. So it's even more passive. Your involvement is even more passive in this case. So we could argue that even Rav Kiva Eger himself would allow such a thing. First of all, not everybody accepts the stringency of Rav Kiva Eger. That's point number one. And point number two, even if you do in deference to Rav Kiva Eger, even if you accept his stringency, but that's only because you set it up that way. So it's as if you're involved on Shabbos. But if it's completely passive, and it's happening by itself, and you don't know when the transaction occurred, and you'd be just as happy if all the merchandise was bought up on Friday. You're not at all looking to sell it on Shabbos. Therefore, it would be you're even less involved. It's even more passive, and it would be mutter. It's not as if you have das kinyan on Shabbos. So the internet, based on that, would be the same thing, that the vendor, whoever the store, the shoe store, or the other store, whatever kind of store it is, even if you leave your website up and running on Shabbos, you do not have intent to specifically sell it on Shabbos. I wrote here in the last line, Shova al Taisa. You're passive. And therefore, it would be permitted even according to Rabbi Kiva Eger. So the Minchas Yitzchak concludes that as long as there's no Maris Ayin, as long as people don't know that this is a Jewish-owned machine. It's interesting that he even considers Maris Ayin here. But as long as people don't know that it's a Jewish-owned machine, as long as the machine is standing in a public domain, it's not like in the yeshiva, it's not being operated someplace in a private domain, it's not clear that it's owned by a Jew. The reason why they consider Maris Ayin is because people might think that you're refilling the machine on Shabbos. As long as the Shem Yisrael is not Nikra, it will be permitted. Okay, so let's summarize what we said until now. We went back and forth if you're allowed to perform a delayed transaction on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So Trumas HaDeshen brings Pinin HaBen, would seem that you would be allowed. Rav Kiva Eger has a complicated proof from Yom Kippur that you would not be allowed. Rav Moshe Feinstein says neither proof is compelling, but he accepts the Chumrah of Rav Kiva Eger not to make a delayed reaction. Now, when you're operating a website or when you're operating a vending machine, transactions are occurring on Shabbos. So the question is, would Rav Kiva Eger say that it's forbidden because you're affecting a transaction on Shabbos, even if you look at it as if you set it up before, but you're affecting a transaction on Shabbos? So a lot of poskim would say, no, it's permitted because it's passive. It's totally passive because you did not have a specific intent to affect the transaction on Shabbos. It's even better than Rav Kiva Eger's cases or the case from the Gemara in Yuma. Now, what about operating a website on Shabbos? What about Lifnei Iver? What if a Jew, a non-religious Jew, opens up the website on Shabbos? Is it considered that I'm being over Lifnei Iver? So that the Poskim say it's not an issue because it's rubai akum, right? Mostly it's non-Jewish. Therefore, I have the right to set it up because I don't have to consider that I'm causing a nichshol to a Jew. It's only a suffix and the atar. They use the site, the atar, the Hebrew word for website, atar, is basically for dvarim mutar. Now I mentioned before, and I wrote it down here in Ayin Yud Gimel, that there's another snif lahakel because the internet, it might not even be considered that you're affecting the transaction. It might just be ordering it, and the transaction might not actually be effective until the item reaches the door. Imagine if the vendor, he mails the item out to the purchaser, right? Or let's say he sends a drone out with the item, and he drops the item down in front of the person's doorstep. And what happens when the drone drops the object? It smashes into smithereens, right? So of course the consumer will be allowed to complain and ask that they send out another drone, right? So what do you see? That the transaction really is not effective until the consumer picks up the item. So there are those who say that we don't have to, that the whole issue is a non-issue as far as the transaction is concerned because it's not actually affected until the end. But even if you do consider it to be a transaction, the eschivus is a transaction, but we can argue that it's permitted because it wasn't bedafka. Now, I didn't write it down on the page, but what about schar Shabbos? What about the fact that you're earning money on Shabbos? So I think, Toby, I think that this is what you were alluding to before, that you're earning money on Shabbos. So to that, there's a noy de Yehuda. Schar Shabbos is when you're renting something or when you're performing a service. But let's say, for example, you would break something of mine on Shabbos and you pay me after Shabbos. That's not Schar Shabbos. That's not Shabbos earnings. You're reimbursing me for something that you broke. So if I sell an object to you and you acquire the object, so I'm not allowed to perform a transaction, but you're reimbursing me for the loss of the object, it wouldn't be considered Schar Shabbos. So it's not a problem of the Iver. It's not a problem of Schar Shabbos. The only potential problem would be a transaction occurring on Shabbos. It might not really be a final transaction until the product is delivered. And even if it is considered a transaction, but the transaction was very passive because you didn't have in mind specifically that it should occur on Shabbos, even Reb Kivenger himself might permit such a thing. So those are the arguments in favor. Now, just to conclude, and we concluded this shiur last week the same way, that technically it's permitted, but there are poskim who are concerned that if we allow such a thing, then you can have a whole, especially in today's day and age, you can have your whole business operating on Shabbos. Imagine Amazon, basically, right? Amazon, a huge, humongous company. So you can have the whole thing operating on Shabbos just as much as during the week because everything is computer operated. So it's as if you're running your business on Shabbos and Yom Tov the way you do during the week. So the Poskim are a little bit concerned and hesitant because of the fact that you can, at the end, it's as if you can run your business on Shabbos and during the week as much as it is. But if there's a clear distinction, if it's just a backup, it's not your main business. Your main business is you have a store, and you also have a website, and you take the orders after Shabbos, and you fill the orders, so technically it would be permitted. I can't confirm this, but I read somewhere that the Art Scroll website is closed on Shabbos, just in honor of this halacha. Maybe somebody can confirm that that's true, but Rabbi Yashiv was very...
Yes, it is.
Oh, so Rabbi Yashiv was very... Rabbi Yashiv was very...
There are sidurim, on people's phones that are linked. So when it's the zman of flip benching, that you can't daven anymore mincha on that web, on that program.
That's very interesting. Yeah. So that's what I was told. So that's good. That's very good. So Rabbi Yashiv said that if you're doing that already, that you're closing it on Shabbos, it should be clear ahead of time that it's going to be closed on Shabbos, and that way people don't even try to access it, and that way you even gain that it's even less of the either. So that's like an extra hither. So just to summarize, the letter of the law is it's permitted. We went through one issue after the other. Letter of the law is permitted. There's a certain sensitivity here that we don't want to introduce too many new things and run the business on Shabbos like a weekday. If it's only a side thing, it's a lot better, but there is certainly a hither if such a thing could be closed on Shabbos, and some high-profile Jewish companies do that, and Rebbe Yashiv adds that it should be noted ahead of time on the website that it's closed on the Sabbathing Jewish holidays. Yashiv Koyach.
Rabbi Burke?
Yes.
Can I throw something in there? Something I actually do know
yes.
Through a friend, and that is that B&H photo.
Yes.